21 minutes after the hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt. One of the stories that is being completely overshadowed by President Obama's disastrous decision to launch a witch hunt against former Bush administration officials is the fact that an Iranian American, is being held prisoner in Iran at this hour. Roxana Saberia is her name. Joining me to discuss that, AEI resident scholar Michael Rubin. Michael, give us the background for people who are looking up and saying, huh, who, what, where, when did that happen? Tell us what's going on.
Okay, basically, Roxana is a 31-year-old Iranian-American journalist. She's also a former beauty queen, Miss North Dakota. She traveled to Iran several years ago, actually, to report, and she was a freelance reporter working for National Public Radio, working for Fox News, and so forth. She was arrested at first, I think, back in January for buying wine, which is usually just a slap on the wrist. But a week before, she was taken to prison, and a week before her trial, the Iranians unilaterally announced, somewhat bizarrely, that she would be tried for espionage for the United States, which is a capital offense. After a one-day trial, she was sentenced to 8 years in prison, although many Iranians, of course, don't survive 8 years in prison. And I guess I just saw in the news headlines that she has declared a hunger strike starting tomorrow. But really, it's not just her case. What's happened is she has become a symbol and an impediment to how the Obama administration is going to deal with the Islamic Republic and how it's going to deal with the fact that very provocatively and very overtly the Iranians have seized an American hostage.
Now, one of the complications here is that she was traveling on her Iranian passport. Do you want to explain to people they should not be confused by this? She is an American citizen.
She is an American citizen. This is what happens. Even at the height of the so-called dialogue of civilizations under the former president, Mohammad Khatami, there was all this talk about track two engagement, meaning groups of different people going back and forth to have cultural exchange. But when you actually look at the figure, we gave Iranian passport holders about 22,000 visas. They gave us around 800 visas. Now, if you're an American and you travel on a U.S. passport, the Iranians are very careful about who they let in, and if you're a reporter, they simply don't renew your visa if they think that you've reported critically. So what happens are a lot of reporters, and we see this all the time on major news media like CNN or New York Times, will self-censor. Now, the way many Iranian-Americans get around this is by traveling to Iran on an Iranian passport, going as a dual citizen. But in that case, on one hand, you circumvent the visa restrictions. On the other hand, even though she is an American citizen, you circumvent, from the Iranian government's perspective, the right to be treated as an American citizen. For all these other past cases of basically hostages, people like Hala Esfandieri, that Washington scholar, the 68-year-old grandmother who was captured and then released last year, she was also traveling on an Iranian passport. This is part of a pattern.
So, Michael Rubin, now, what has the United States said and done about Roxana Saberi and her imprisonment?
The White House and the State Department have offered statements condemning it. Aside from that, we haven't done much at all, and the Iranians have made quite clear in their press releases and in their media that they really don't care for the statements. There was a newspaper headline the other day about how telling the United States, you are weak and you can't do a darn thing.
There is some speculation that you cite in your article today, A Target of Convenience, from the New York Times blogger Robert Mackey, that they view her as a bargaining chip to get some Quds Forces personnel back. That's a deal we simply cannot make.
Exactly. And just in background, what this is referring to was a bit more than a year ago, even a year and a half ago, our forces, after careful observation for months, seized some Iranian Quds Force operatives. The Quds Force is the crack unit of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is charged with export of revolution. These are the guys who were shipping the explosively formed projectiles and other weaponry to militias and so forth, which was killing not only U.S. troops, but also Iraqi civilians. We rolled them up, and what the Iranians are trying to do, Robert Mackey suggests, is have some sort of swap. The problem here is, number one, it sets a moral equivalent between an Iranian-American journalist, a 31-year-old, and seasoned, hardened terrorists. Number two, we've been down this road before during the Iran hostage crisis. Whatever one thinks about that, back during the Reagan administration, the basis of this was that we would ship arms to Iran and that Iranians would use their good offices to facilitate the release of hostages. And indeed, several hostages were released. But as soon as the arms stopped, as soon as we stopped giving concessions, what the Iranian government did was seize within a space of, I think, a week, three more hostages. And so we don't want to go into a pattern with Iran where they feel that the best way to get concessions is just to take Americans hostage. And remember, there's a former FBI agent who has been missing for about 2 years now, who's also in Iran.
Michael Rubin, what is the what's your advice to the American media about Saberi? Should they be pouring on the coverage?
I do think that it's useful to pour on the coverage and to make the Iranian people know that so long as their government treats people like this, that their government is going to be held accountable. We've tried quiet diplomacy in the past, and it hasn't worked. Again, I cite the case of this American former FBI agent who was seized inside Iran and simply disappeared. We haven't had any luck with that. I'm not sure whether there's so much of a good option here. Every time we have reached out to Iran, we faced a situation like this. When Madeleine Albright reached out to Iran, several U.S. businessmen who were on a trip to Iran were attacked when their bus was set upon by vigilantes. Frankly, we've just got to recognize that the Iranian government is what it is and not what our diplomats wish it to be. That's number one, and it takes two to tango.
I have been immersed in Amir Tahiri's new book, The Persian Night. Have you read it yet?
I have not read it yet.
What is his reputation?
Amir Tahiri is he's known as someone, he has moral clarity. He's very much an opponent of the Islamic Republic. He was a newspaper editor before the revolution. Within the academic world, his reputation was a little bit mixed because of some issues regarding use of sources and so forth, but generally speaking, he has a reputation for having fierce moral clarity and for making no compromise when it comes to the Islamic Republic.
And 45 seconds, Michael Rubin, do you expect Israel is going to be obliged to attack the Islamic Republic?
It very well may. We see Iran as a strategic inconvenience if they should develop nuclear weapon capability. Israel sees this as an existential threat. And one of the major issues, which we don't discuss, is that if the Iranian government, the Islamic Republic, were to collapse of its own accord, and these Ayatollahs saw the writing on the wall, some of them might feel we might as well just launch the nukes.
Michael Rubin, on that very sober moment, we'll wait until next time to continue. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.